From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Comedian, actor Russell Brand is a piece of work. Marvelous in many ways. Quick, bright, zany, in your face. The funny guy with the wild black hair, eyeshadow, tight leather pants, stylish boots. He's made a lot of people laugh, poked a lot of fun. Now he's on a new mission, still funny, but calling for revolution. Down with the old, our broken politics and corrupt capitalism, he says. In with something new, better, less desperate and destructive, he says. This hour on Point, comedian Russell Brand's Revolution. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you fed up, no joke, ready to revolt with Russell Brand waving the flag? What do you think of his vision for, as he says, a fairer, sexier society that's fun and inclusive? Who wouldn't like that? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. If you've been living under a rock and don't know Russell Brand, let me give you just a little taste. This is a breakout role in the U.S., I guess globally, 2008, Forgetting Sarah Marshall in the film. Here's Russell's playing Aldous Snow, British rock star, it's complicated, but here he is in a funny scene, wanders in shirtless and clueless as Sarah and her Peter are bumping into each other at the concierge.
I came here and here you are. I just think that's too crazy to...
Hello there, you little sex object. I've lost a shoe. I've seen it anywhere. It's like this one, but, you know, obviously it's the opposite one. Excuse me, missus. I've lost a shoe. Like, this one. It's like this one's fellow. The exact opposite, in fact, of that.
Uh-huh.
Not an evil version, but just, you know, a shoe like this, but for the other foot. Otherwise, I'd have two right...
Aldous, this is Peter.
Hey, all right, Peter. Nice to meet you, mate.
My ex-boyfriend.
Oh, right, hey, I'm Aldous Snow.
I know who you are, yeah, you're very, very famous.
Yeah, I am, for my sins.
Russell Brand, as rock star Aldous Snow in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, joining us now from New York. Russell Brand, man of many trades, comedian, actor, author, activist, starred in Judd Apatow's Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Get Him to the Greek, a big voice in Despicable Me and its 2013 sequel. His most recent stand-up world tour was called Messiah Complex. Lately, he hosts an online news show called The Trues, as in True News, and is out with a new book this week. It's called Revolution. Russell Brand, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you.
Thanks, Tom.
Is this going to sell in the USA? It's not exactly the world capital of revolution.
Well, as a matter of fact, it had a very successful revolution the last time it was represented by an economic elite that took taxes without demonstrating any interest in the political will of the people that it governed. Only that time, of course, it was red-coated British as opposed to a masked economic elite. So this country has already had a very successful revolution with a lot less impetus, I might argue.
From the start, no doubt, these days a little less. What's the call you're making, Russell? If you've got lots of people listening across the country right now, you've waved this flag of revolution, what do you have to say? What's the reason?
Well, it's not just me. Excuse me, I'm eating a banana. I've not had a lot of time to eat. It's not just me. 80% of American people believe that this country, your country, is run for an economic elite, not for ordinary people. 50% of Americans don't vote. We're talking now at a time when one in six American families require food stamps to feed themselves, even when they are working. Our prisons are filling up, or your prisons are filling up with ordinary people. The bottom 15% of people are no longer required by the manufacturing industries that were no longer made economic sense to keep in this country but to outsource, and now fodder for prisons. The conditions are rife for change, and the political system that we currently have in your country, in my country, is never going to provide that change, because for them this isn't a problem. For them this is the desired result: a despondent, disenfranchised, lost population, spellbound and enchanted by glistening, gleaming, vacuous media, and an ecological meltdown in pursuit of profit. So no change is going to come from within this system. The system is working fine for them. So all I'm proposing really is that ordinary people have a degree of control over their own lives. In fact, all I'm really proposing is democracy.
Oh, that's outrageous.
No, Tom.
Listen, I'm trying...
you can look around and the numbers you cite are there and people can be pretty upset. We hear from them often. There are a lot of things that aren't working as they might. You've been around. I've been around, spent a lot of time in China before it took off on its more capitalist, though still communist-controlled path, back when it was more traditionally socialist. And whatever you might say about it, traveling around China in those days, it was just poor, Russell. It was ragged. And now look at it. Now China's thriving, and it's doing a lot of the things you don't like. I mean, you know, it's environmentally destructive. It's got an elite that's super powerful. But when you look back to those revolutionary days, I mean, before I was there, there was full-on famine. And even when I showed up in the late 70s, early 80s in China, it was so poor. How do you avoid that with your revolution, Russell?
Well, I think in myriad ways. First of all, by countenancing the possibility that there are not only two options, a communist state where power is concentrated in the hands of a few people, or a capitalist oligarchy where power is concentrated in the hands of a few people. But as Chomsky would say, the deconcentration of power. Wherever you find power concentrated, you find corruption. But it's possible in this age to have municipal authority. It's possible in this age of technology to have referenda. And all I'm really proposing, mate, is just the rational principle that people control their own workplaces, that people control their own communities democratically, and that at a national or state level, the interests of people are represented, not the interests of big business. I don't know what life is like for the ordinary people of Beijing, mate, but I'd imagine they might be getting shafted. So all I'm suggesting is that for ordinary people all over the world to recognise that they have more in common with one another than they do with the economic elites that govern them, that make us fearful and suspicious of each other on the basis of race, sexuality, religion, for the ordinary people of the world to come together and demand a different way of living, a way that's in accordance with natural principles, self-governance, control of our own communities. That's all I'm suggesting.
Municipal authority, local control, bring it down. That sounds kind of organic and in a way, as you say, natural, but it doesn't sound easy. What would that take to actually wrest some of that power away from upstairs and bring it down?
I reckon it would take, mate, some confrontation with corporation, because at the moment corporate elites don't recognise that there's the ability to dismantle them or in any way erode their power. Exxon last year made $45 billion, the biggest profit any company has made in the history of mankind, and they made that profit by ransacking the Earth's resources. Exxon ain't going to change as long as the ideology of capitalism, consumerism and profit exists. They're only going to change when people demand alternatives. But fortunately, even in the field of energy, those alternatives exist. It would be possible to change to entirely renewable energy in 15 years. Of course, that information is not readily available because Exxon can't make loads of money out of renewable energy in 15 years. So, I'm really interested in that guy, Buckminster Fuller. Buckminster Fuller says that, you know, that what we should have is just systems that are in accordance with rationality and with logic and reason. We are on a planet. There's a certain number of people. There's a certain amount of resources. Would we, if we were starting from scratch right now, say, hey, I tell you what, let's have 65 people with as much money as 3.5 billion people. Let's have that. Hey, let's have a system where the six Walmart heirs have as much money as 150 million American, ordinary American people. And of course, I wouldn't mind. And you know, even if this system was somehow ecologically responsible, if this was somehow operating in accordance with preserving the planet. But this is ecological meltdown is occurring as a result of these capitalist principles, and there is an alternative. They act like, you know, that they're the grown-ups, that anybody that's sort of proposing any alternative ideas are some sort of whacked-out crazy hippies. But these are the people that have trade agreements that mean that America exports and imports the exact same amount of beef. These are the people that have trade agreements that mean that agricultural produce is grown in my country, flown to South Africa to be waxed and polished, then flown back to my country to be sold. These people are idiots. They're laughing at us. Their only motivation is profit. They've had a good go at it. Capitalism is doing what it was always designed to do, other than a brief blip between 50 and 75, and will always continue to do this. But it's okay, because we don't have to tolerate it. We don't have to live like this. If you're happy with it, carry on. Live like it. It's not mandatory. You know, if this is working for you, if you're one of the 65 super rich people or you're one of the Walmart heirs, just carry on. It's cool. But if you are someone that's working hard and living on food stamps, or if you're an ordinary middle class person you don't feel like you've got any authority, any autonomy, like your core values are being eroded, like you're working all the hours God sends, that a technological revolution hasn't given you any extra leisure time like it was, like it pledged to do, then you don't have to live like this. You don't have to live like this. This is just one option. And the people that say this is the only option are the people that benefit from this being the option.
Russell Brand, where's your sense of humour?
Well, I mean, I'm a professional comedian. You come along and see my show Messiah Complex, or indeed watch it when it's on Epics on the 28th of November, and I will knock your socks off, Tom.
But it's not funny on this front. I mean, we've got to come back and explore this political passion. Americans know you for humor above all, but here you were as a guest editor of the New Statesman magazine, what, like a year ago? You put this thesis out, it's time for revolution. You got some tough pushback there. Is this book your effort to say, Russell Brand's serious? He's really wading into politics.
It's not an effort to do anything. It is what it is. And I spoke to people that, you know, the heavy lifting in this book is done by Naomi Klein, by Noam Chomsky, by Thomas Piketty, by Helena Norberg Hodge, people that have devoted their lives to understanding global trade, people that have spent their lives unravelling the mysteries of language and the manufacture of consent. What I've done in the book is I put it together in a pretty, like, accessible way. But the important thing, Tom, for me is that, you know, I come from an ordinary background, an ordinary working family. I went back to the town I'm from, Grays in Essex. It's kind of like Camden, New Jersey. The place has deteriorated. It's been destroyed. And the people that are where I'm, people from where I'm from, are looking to immigrants and people that are vaguely different to them for solutions. We're seeing rise of far-right politics all over Europe. And that's, you know, fair enough. Be a racist if it made any difference. Be an Islamophobe if it makes any difference. Be an anti-Semite if it made any difference. But the only power struggle that makes any difference is the struggle between those that have power and wealth and those that don't. And
Russell, hold it right there. We've got a break. Russell Brand's new book is Revolution. He joins us from New York. Russell, stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour with comedian, actor, now political activist, Russell Brand. His new book is titled Revolution, and he means just that. It is a call to tear down what he calls a tired old system and build something better. Russell Brand is, of course, an actor, comedian, author of several books, movies that you know, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Get Into the Greek, Arthur, voice actor in Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2. His most recent stand-up tour was called Messiah Complex. Funny, offensive, wild. Here he is last year, putting his obsession with great revolutionary leaders in perspective.
Messiah Complex is a psychological condition wherein the sufferer believes themselves to be Jesus Christ, a messianic figure sent to earth to save humanity. Why would you be interested in that subject, Russell? You're such an unassuming, well-balanced young man.
Yes, right. He writes in his new book, Revolution, says, my whole life I have sought comfort in individualism. I escaped the banality of my background with the flamboyance of my haircut, the low expectations of my class with the grandiosity of my parlance, and the fear of being ordinary by becoming a professional weirdo. In a way, my success in show business represents little more than the harvesting of my psychosis. I made my idiosyncrasies and flaws beneficial by exaggerating them. Now he's turning them to politics. Russell Brand ran off to the loo, as they say in London, I think, for a second in New York. But I think we've got him back. Russell, thanks for coming back.
Hello, Tom.
Feeling better?
I took advantage of the weather and traffic reports to check in with my own vital systems.
Very good. Very good. Russell, there's a lot we want to learn. So do our listeners. They're calling in. Alan in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You're on with Russell Brand, Alan.
Thank you, Tom. Russell.
Hello, Alan.
My question to you is, you seem to be railing against capitalism as a big bad evil, but we have a person named Bill Gates, who married Melinda Gates, and they've donated hundreds of millions of dollars a year to fight AIDS in Africa, all these diseases, and put all their money in trust, and they're putting their money where their mouth is. And my question to you is, how much of your money, of your millions of dollars, do you plan on giving to NGOs to affect real change, to help real people who are suffering and dying in this world, or are you just trying to make money off a book here?
Yes, Rich Russell, how about you?
Well, this book, Revolution, any money that we make from it, we're putting into social enterprises, people with addiction issues getting back into work. We're setting up juice bars and cafes initially in the UK, run not-for-profit, but we'll do them wherever there is a need. And more importantly, though, than getting the people with in recovery, like myself, back into work, is creating alternative business models, you know, because to demonstrate that people can work for reasons other than the profit motive. And whilst I think philanthropy and altruism is in its way admirable, it still exists within the context of a kind of elitism and a kind of hierarchical acceptance that it's okay for, you know, sort of certain people to live, like for the majority of people to live in poverty, whilst an economic elite sort of lord it over us. But if you're asking, like, is hypocrisy something I sort of think about? It certainly is, mate, yeah, because I come from a poor working class background, and now having sort of made a person, you know, personally become wealthy, it's a, like, you know, no person that's ever been poor ever really is ever free from that. You have a kind of a fear and a guilt attached to your kind of success, particularly as, like, one of the motivating factors for me writing this book was going back to the place where I was from and seeing how it deteriorated and seeing the necessity for change. And so the points you make are good ones, mate, but I don't think the answer is for us to look to sort of rich benefactors for handouts. No, it's more important, given that it's an option, to reorganise society so that it's more fair generally. And I think one-off altruistic donations or sort of, I don't know, even radical taxation isn't the solution. What we need is a reorganisation of our systems. But that's no problem, because it's a possibility. If you're asking me, am I prepared to invest in this personally, the answer, my friend, is absolutely 100%.
Russell, what do you think got us into the pickle that you're describing here of such a concentration of wealth and such a kind of disempowerment? After all, your country, the UK, this country, the US, we've got democracies. People can speak up. They can rally, organize, do whatever they like, pretty much. So how do we end up in this spot?
Well, I think that the freedom probably exists within quite narrow parameters if you were to test it, and that the debate exists within pretty narrow parameters as well. Like, I think in our country there's like five or six people own 97% of all media, and I think it's comparable in your country as well. So the conversation is prohibited and limited, and I think sort of from a spiritual perspective, it's like, you know, I've got selfishness and greed and vanity and narcissism in me, and if you live in a culture that's constantly stimulating those values, it's really kind of easy to drift towards them. It's almost like we've legislated for the worst aspects of human nature and forgotten the beautiful components. Yeah, human beings can be selfish and greedy and vain. I know I can, but we can also be beautiful and generous and inspiring and spontaneous. And we've sort of lost the facility to administrate for that. We've forgotten what we're here for. But it's, you know, now's the time really to start looking at that because of the ecological imperative. I've spent a lot of time talking to Naomi Klein and listening to Naomi Klein lately, and she says that, you know, it's capitalism that's causing climate change, and that the people that are benefiting from the sort of the energy crisis heading in the direction it is are not going to do anything about it. There's just too much profit in it for them. So the only way change is going to come from is from outside the system. That's just another way of saying revolution. Revolution just means, you know, that the institutions that are in place aren't going to provide the necessary change. So that change has to come from without. And obviously you don't want to replace it with a comparable system, just a recasting different faces in the same role. You just need a deconcentration of power, sharing of power, sharing of resources.
You quote a lot of George Orwell in your book, in addition to Chomsky and Thomas Piketty, who's been here recently, and Naomi Klein, who's been here recently. But you quote from Homage to Catalonia, and him saying, above all, there was a belief in the revolution and the future, a feeling of having suddenly emerged into an era of equality and freedom. But in this revolution, Russell, who decides what's humane and beautiful? How do you get the good part of change and not what Orwell would also write about, which is, you know, when you've got, you talk about who's going to administer for the humane and beautiful, people worry about that. And they say, well, let the market do it, because otherwise you tempt tyranny.
Well, I think we've seen what the market does. We're living in what the market does. We're living in ecological meltdown. We're living in galling inequality. What the market does is no longer a matter for speculation, but a matter for great, great fear, great concern, and necessary immediate action. Who legislates for it? Well, I would say in a genuine democracy, all of us do deconcentrate power and we'll legislate ourselves. I think that what I think was important, and when you're talking about value systems, mate, I mean, it's, I guess, obvious ethical and moral values, taking care of one another, prioritising our individual, familial and social and global health over the concerns and interests of a few elite institutions. And I think it's important as well, Tom, to remember, you know, like when people go, oh, yeah, what exactly are you going to do? What are the alternatives? Well, lots of the alternatives are outlined in my book. Loads of the alternatives have been spelled out plenty of times. Mm-hmm. But I think what's important is we're not competing with perfection. We're competing with a corrupt, destructive system that is bringing the planet to its knees. I mean, this is like, this is a serious time. I mean, it's difficult for us to face up to the reality of the ecological crisis that we're on the precipice of. I don't like thinking about it. I don't like thinking, oh no, I'm going to have to change. But at the moment, there's a possibility of over the next 15 years changing to renewable energy, changing to a more responsible economy, changing to a deconcentrated, collectivised system of shared power where people run their own workplaces, where people run their own communities, where the technology that enables democracy for reality television shows like American Idol can be utilised for people to live in a state of referenda around the issues that affect them. This already happens to a degree in countries like Switzerland, but there you've not got an informed media, so people vote the way that they would, you know, the people would have them vote anyway. So really, mate, there are alternatives. We know there are alternatives. All I'm saying now is that there's a massive impetus for pretty immediate change.
Why is it you waving this flag, Russell? And why not all those people in the House of Commons or Lords or in government or in political leaders? Why is it? I mean, you are many things at this point, but foremost among them, you've been a comedian, a kind of joker, a word I use with respect, or jokester. Why is it you out of that background waving this flag? And not somebody else.
I suppose because the people that are in the Senate, Congress, Parliament want things to remain largely as they are. Even people like, you know, even people that work for sort of legit organisations, even left-leaning liberal organisations, kind of want to complain from within the way things are. People don't want genuine change. But I think be very wary of people that are prescriptive about what change should look like. Be very wary of people that say that we should be grateful for what we have. Because for me, those people are... they're preventing necessary progress and they're inadvertently supporting a really corrupt and indefensible system. And it doesn't just fall on me, actually, mate. Like, I've just chatted to a few people in this book. I don't do none of the heavy lifting in this book. It's done by proper academics that know the score. David Graeber, an economist and anthropologist who taught for years at NYU. I didn't sit down and go, right, how do we design a new economic system? I spoke to people who know loads about this stuff and they explained to me, oh, no. There's loads of alternatives. The people that tell you have no alternatives are the people that want the system to stay the way it is. People that say the system, when people say the system works, they mean the system works for me.
Mike in Omaha, Nebraska, you're on with Russell Brand. His book is Revolution. What do you say, Mike?
Hi, Tom. I like your show. I like this gentleman. The reason I called is when the guy called criticizing the idea of the philanthropists and how they're doing such good. And I read something a while back that said something to the effect that Oprah and Will Gates and people like that, that's great that they give money. And it's really good because, you know, it helps out. But the problem is that if they taxed differently, the government would give out money to all people. And in these cases, they can pick and choose where they want to spend their money. And the difference is that you get a bigger benefit if the taxes are raised and the money was distributed by the government. Now, well, yes, government can be criticized for not doing things right, but it's a broader. And the other thing, I work in the hospital. And there's been criticisms of hospitals not donating enough. And if they're nonprofit, they aren't taxed. Their land is taxed.
Yep.
And some of them will boast about what they give to the indigent. Well, they're supposed to. And I read an article that says if the hospitals are taxed, the amount of money that they would be paying in tax would far override what they give to the indigent. So really, you know, the point being is what this gentleman's saying is, I think, is really good. He's a philanthropist in a certain sense because he's trying to find a different solution that's not necessarily tied to money, although it is. But it's not just like, here's $25 million. You know, who's to say that these guys are doing this in part to avoid some taxes?
Mike, we've got it. Make it public, not necessarily private. Russell, you hear that. And I wonder how you talk a lot about concentration of wealth. How would you go after that money? What's your plan to shake it out? Our caller from Omaha says, maybe private philanthropy is not the best way. How would you see it? Are you into redistribution? Yeah. Russell, how?
Yeah, I kind of am. When I spoke to Thomas Piketty about it, and he suggested some pretty modest reforms of like a 5% tax on wealth. Throughout spiritual doctrine, like the Quran and the Bible, they talk about the dangers of usury, of people living enslaved in debt, about the immobility of wealth once it's sort of institutionalized. I think a tax on wealth is certainly something that's worth looking at, mate. So like, I think the stuff that Piketty has said, Look, well, one of the problems I'd like to address is how we've sort of made economics the heart of political life. And really, economics is a tool of distribution, a necessary symbol for the way that resources are moved around. It's not like a system to worship. You know, like when the problem of the economic collapse happened in 2007, 2008, yep. They found trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars to hold up those institutions. They already have socialism. They already have redistribution of wealth. They already have debt cancellation. We're not discussing whether those things are possible.
You're talking the big banks right there, banks.
Yeah, for the big banks. That's right, mate. They do those things already for their tribal, in support of their own tribal interests. We're not talking about if it's possible. We're talking about who it's possible for. Is it possible for an economic elite in the financial industry, or is it possible for ordinary people? That's the only question that we're raising. We know it's possible. They're already doing it. Right now, quantitative easing means that trillions of dollars of your money is being pumped into the financial industry to hold together a system that can't support itself. Capitalism is built upon survival of the fittest. It's built upon, well, if there's a demand, the market will regulate it. Well, the market did regulate itself. It collapsed. Right. And then the government held it up because they knew that, oh my God, the game's up. The jig's over. The whole coup is falling apart. People are going to have to start looking for alternatives.
Russell, take a breath. The new book is Revolution. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Paula in Cleveland, Ohio. You're on with Russell Brand.
Oh, well, hi, Tom. Hi, Russell. It's interesting that you guys are currently talking about how we could bring it back to the people. Because listening to all of this and listening to all the callers, you know, it really makes me think about the average citizen. You know, the average citizen works. You know, most of them are in debt. You know, most of them go home and they watch the news. And what you see on the news is most likely sad stuff. So, and then every day you find mistrust in normal humans with that. And how are you going to bring it back to human connectivity, because I think that's the real thing that can bring back like individual goals and human concern is connecting the citizens to each other, you know, actually connecting in an age of technological advancement. You know, you talk to people on Facebook. I see people all the time at diners, you know, they're talking with their friends, but they're not really talking with them. They're on phones. So how are we going to bring it really back to the people?
Would you do it with revolution, Paula, or go out and vote, or, you know, I don't know, join the Rotary Club? How would you do it? Is a revolution the way?
Me?
Yeah.
I personally think people need to start paying attention to themselves. And I think in a way we do need to, what Russell said, redistribute some of the wealth. Because you go into the store every day, all food additives, and then you come home with a bunch of bad food. And then you go to work to pay for a car, you know, that you're most likely still paying off, and you still have more debt. What about the people's needs? What about good food? What about making sure everybody has clothes? What about, you know, general human connectivity, general community?
That's pretty important stuff. Paula, thank you for your call from Cleveland. Russell, there's Paula kind of singing your tune out of Cleveland.
Paul is spot on there. We've become somnambulists. We are sleepwalking through life. We've become indentured and enslaved and trapped. We've forgotten that we're like these tribal communal animals. We're part of nature. It's not our job to come here and have mastery and dominion over nature. We're here to share with one another, to commune with one another. We're trapped in little technological prisons. All of this information and the wonderful technology we've been given has been used to further isolate and insulate us. Paula makes some really, really good points there, because what's lacking is our communal values. That's the price we pay for living in a selfish, greedy society. Like, all around us we see acts of kindness and beauty and love. Our humanity is there. It's all around us. I mean, all it is I just think the systems for these things to flourish are being slowly eroded and replaced. It's like human beings are still beautiful. Human beings are still kind. Where is the canvas? Where is the palette for us to be the human beings that we're supposed to be? Paula makes me feel very optimistic, because it makes me realise that the awareness is there. We are awake. That we can't constantly be, you know, fed this bad medicine, given this shoddy nutrition. You know, like, so if I get, did you see that thing that the UN said that that it would be entirely possible to feed the world with localized organic farming? Industrialized farming benefits guess who?
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with comedian, actor, now political activist, Russell Brand. His new book is titled Revolution, and he means just that. He says it's called to tear down what he calls a tired old system and build something better. Joins us from New York today. Outspoken, funny guy, high style, quick mind. You can hear it. Just Quicksilver doesn't leave everybody so happy. In New York in 2009, here he is reading from a letter from one of his not-so-happy viewers.
Here's a selection of my favorite death threats. This one's from Yankee. What will be his persuasion? You piece of Who the do you think you are? I'm Russell. Why don't you drop dead and die? Well, that's actually a tautology. Once you've dropped dead, you can't then die. Unless Yankee is a Hindu and he believes in reincarnation. Right, drop dead. Now come back as a mouse. Now die a mouse death.
Russell Brand, 2009. Now he is out with his new book, Revolution. He joins us from New York. Steve, in Storrs, Connecticut, you're on the air with Russell Brand.
Hi, how are you? My comment is that I'd like to challenge the idea that capitalism is actually a cause of all of environmental problems, for example, rather than capitalism is a medium or a conduit through which the actual cause is operating. And I think the actual cause is all of us as individuals pursuing our own happiness. For example, I recently changed jobs, and in doing that, I traded in a, you know, to get the better job, so to speak, I traded in a 20-mile commute on my bicycle for basically a 100-mile round trip on a car. And in doing that, I get more money, my family's perhaps better off, but I'm also not facing the costs I've imposed on global warming. So I guess what I'm really questioning is, if capitalism is part of the problem, really as a conduit, and it's the real problem is that people are all individually pursuing their own happiness, but within the rules of the game, whatever the game is. So capitalism is one game.
And there are others, and none particularly clean at big industrial scale. Russell Brand, how about it? It's not capitalism. It's just humans doing what humans do, you know, grabbing for something better.
In a way, capitalism is an expression of some sort of inherent aspect of our nature, but it's only one component of our nature. And in a way, mate, you've got the new job to get more money, right? So in a situation where you didn't require a new job to get more money,
but it feels good. He likes it. His family's got another, I don't know, another vacation. Another, I mean, that's what people
do. Sure, but in a way, the
fact you've done.
Tom, my darling. If we're pursuing these short end goals in our forever clamoring after tidbits of happiness, that's because we're living in an illusory capitalist system. What I would say, mate, is that there are alternatives. There are different options. Now, like sort of global warming and climate change would radically alter if Exxon couldn't make $45 billion of profit a year from harming the planet. If we made a 15-year transition to renewable energy, then what we did on an individual basis, cycling to work or driving to work, wouldn't make a sufficient difference. You make an important point, about the individual narrative, our individual culpability. We're all aware, aren't we, with the statistics around you should eat 5 fruit and veg a day, you should eat 7 fruit and veg a day, you should eat 10 fruit and veg a day. Do you know how they arrived at that conclusion? They looked at data longevity data. Oh, these people live a long time. Look at them. And they eat a lot of fruit and veg a day. They drew the conclusion that we should all eat a lot of fruit and veg a day. But if you look a little more closely at that data, you'll see that the people that eat that a lot of fruit and veg a day are rich people. So you could also draw the conclusion that people live longer when they are rich. And what would be nice, instead of you as an individual responsible for yourself, you make your own bed, you lie in it. Why not, instead of that, you eat 5 fruit and veg a day? How about a system where we can all afford to eat fruit and veg every day, that we all have that healthier lifestyle? So the way we narrativize our individual culpability is very important. If we're all living in a system where we're pursuing our individual needs, we've got to get a better job, we've got to get a better holiday, none of which is really working for any of us, is it? Is it really working? can see, I'm talking from, I'm coming from the perspective of, I bought into it. I was told, get famous, get smothered in glitter, chase women, chase fame, chase the glamour. I did it. I was a good boy. I pursued the American dream. I got there, and when I arrived, I found that it was empty. This is not to say there's elements that I don't enjoy. I love having this haircut. I like these trainers that I'm wearing. I'm not talking about becoming a total asceticism. I'm not talking about I'm going to become a monk and live in sackcloth. Yeah. What I'm saying is that I was duped. We've been conned. Happiness lies in another direction. We all know that. And what's more, that only a few people are going to get plucked out of the obscurity in the Hunger Games of modern culture.
Here, Drew in Georgia responds to you, Russell Brand says, democracy, what a novel idea. Let's give it a try. But here's another listener. Kathy says, revolution, she writes, is a nice, silly thought. But if we actually had one, it would be led by the Tea Party and the UKIP, your independent party, called a hard right party there. And the liberal, educated middle class would be the first ones against the wall. The 1% would be the winners and probably end up with churches raised to the sacred job creators. Watch out, Russell Brand.
That's one way it could go, but I mean, obviously, it's us that's in charge. like, I wouldn't vote for that one. I wouldn't participate in that one. If you've, the simple truth is this: there are more of us than there are of them. If this doesn't resonate, if it doesn't appeal to you, then it's okay. You don't have to participate. But if you feel that it's unfair that one in six Americans is living on food stamps in spite of the fact that they're working, if you think it's problematic that wealth has become so ludicrously concentrated in the hands of the few, the majority of people are living in either spiritual or physical hunger, if that doesn't trouble you, then it sort of doesn't matter. I'm not talking to you. But if you think there's a possibility of a different world, a fairer world, then just think about how you can change on a local level. Think about how you can change your own workplace, how you can change your own communities. And there's lots of people that feel like you. I mean, the reason that I'm doing this is just because it resonates, because like I found myself in situations where I was having these conversations, and it's been a self-fulfilling and self-perpetuating experience.
Jay.
And don't like, you know, just this... Tea Party UKIP thing, you know, that's, they're like, UKIP are not any kind of alternative. They're run by one millionaire and based on the worst aspects of human nature. It's one millionaire.
In the UK,
but the guy that runs it is a banker.
Didn't I read they just got someone into parliament for the first time, elected, kind of a big deal, people talking about it in your country with a sort of nationalistic, I don't know, Nazi salute somebody in their leadership was giving. Isn't that who they are?
Yeah, in times of fear, mate, there's always this little bit of this right-wing titillation. That's why us lot have got a responsibility to share an alternative story.
Jay in Virginia Beach, Virginia, you're on with Russell Brand.
Hey, Tom. Cheers, Russell.
Cheers, mate.
How you guys doing?
Okay, yeah, what do you think? Thank you.
Well, you know, Russell, I love you as a comedian, but hearing you speak this way in such a deep, passionate voice, I love you even more, and I really want to find a way to get in touch with you and organize something going on in my area, but, you know, there's some things going on that are so real to what you're speaking of, and there's a difference between attachment and connection. Attachment is a need. Connection is a loving, sharing thing, and all these people that have this money are attached to all the corporations and company that supply them with their money. And a friend of mine is an organic farmer, has been for 20 years. He cannot get a grant, funding, anything, but his neighbors who grow corn and soybeans to feed crops, I mean, to feed livestock, they get all the money in the world because they're pumping so much stuff into these chemical companies, and it's disgusting. They're all in bed together, and it does have to change, but the system is set up in such a way that we have to work so many hours a week just to barely support our families that we don't have the time or energy left at the end of the day to do anything about it.
So, Jay, what do you say? Go to the voting booth and vote, or go to the streets and revolt?
Voting, what does it do? Any of the parties that are up there, you know, one of my friends said something that really makes a lot of sense. You know, you see NASCAR drivers. They have to put on their shirts who show their sponsors. Well, why don't politicians have to do that? That's where it comes from. They're voting based on where they're getting their money.
Jay, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. We get one more for Russell. Jay, thank you. Isabella.
Pretty good, that from Jay. Jay knows the score, doesn't he? Jay's seen through the illusion. Jay's away. Good work, Jay. Keep going, mate. There's no one to vote for. It's not a voting allergy. Give us someone to vote for, and we'll vote for it. But look at what happened to Yes We Can and Change. Where's the Yes We Can? Where's the we? Where's the change? Every so often, one of these smiling, charismatic chumps crops up in our political circles. What happens afterwards? Nothing. We went through Tony Blair. We went through Clinton. We've been through Obama. Where is the change? Where is the representation for ordinary people.
Isabella.
Nice work, Jay.
Isabella, Weston, Massachusetts. Isabella, you're on.
Hi. Thanks, Tom. And thank you so much, Russell, for what you're saying and doing. I'm totally on board with you. I'm almost 70 years old. I'm a child of the 60s, totally inspired by Abby Hoffman and the revolutionary movement that he led. But I've got a very serious question for you, and this is coming from a lifelong Democratic Party activist. I think most people are totally disillusioned with both political parties, but, you know, independents seem to have a snowball's chance in hell of winning an election. It so rarely happens. So how do you propose bringing about, a change? I think it's got to be done at the ballot box, but how?
Isabel, I'll put that to Russell, but I'll tell you in advance. He says don't do it. He says don't vote. He says take it to the streets.
Tom,
you're 70.
You keep fetishizing this don't vote thing.
It's just two words. I want to ask Isabella what she thinks about your revolutionary road.
Hold on, Tom. Tom, you have a duty. You're a journalist. You're a serious person on a serious public-funded broadcast. Here is the message. The sentence doesn't end at don't vote. This is the sentence.
Okay.
Give us something worth voting for. Stop working for huge corporations. Stop denigrating the ordinary people of this great country. People that have given their lives. People that are toiling like Jay. Women like Isabel that have been active for political parties. Start representing the people of your country instead of the institutions that maraud around the world, ransacking our resources and exploiting our people. It's not don't vote. It's stop voting for your own enslavement. Stop voting for your own tyranny. Stop voting for a system that pumps trillions of dollars into holding itself up while ordinary people suffer.
I get it, Russell, but be honest. You're not saying that the path is through voting. You're saying that the path is through revolution. And you're describing those. And it's not there, and you don't like it.
There's nothing within the current paradigm, Tom, to vote for. The Democrats aren't going to help you. The Republicans aren't going to help you. We need localized democratic process. We need a real alternative. We need to deconcentrate power. And they will never do that because they like it the way it is. They like working for their corporate cronies. They like it. So they are not going to bring about change. If you want change, you've got to do something yourself. Stop expecting people to feed it to you. Stop expecting some grinning individual to crop up in Congress and help, because they ain't going to do it. They don't work for you. They work for them. If you want change, you've got to make the change yourself. Men like Jay, women like Isabel are the voice of that change. You've heard it from your callers. People are ready. And it doesn't require much. It's going to be easier than what we're doing already. It's going to be better than what we're doing already. And we can save the planet together and live spiritually free. An end to the alienation that we're living under. An end to the tyranny of debt. An end to feeling alone, spellbound by dumb, glistening screens, eating food that is lacking in nutrition. We can live free as human beings together. But for that to happen, we have to unite. Don't pursue the prescriptive narrative that all I've said is, don't vote, don't vote. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying wake up. Wake up now.
It's more than don't vote. Granted. And beyond that, it's revolt. Isabella, what do you think? Don't vote is only a mild simplification. Yes, Russell has a lot more to say, but essentially he doesn't go for the ballot box. He doesn't go. He doesn't. You hear it in what he's saying right now. He doesn't believe in it. You're a lifelong political activist. Are you ready to go the revolutionary road, Isabella?
Oh, I'm ready to march in the streets and all of that, and I've done plenty. But I think, you know, if you want ultimate change, you do have to vote in representatives in your government who are going to, implement the change that you seek. So I think I agree with Russell's analysis. Mm-hmm. I share his anger, but I think, you know, there's got to be a more constructive way of getting together than just say everybody do your own thing. We are doing
our own
thing.
Oh, no, it's not that. I'm not like a libertine. I'm not saying like let's sit at home with some guns and money and jerk off. I'm saying that we have to act collectively and communally. That's what I'm saying. And there's lots of, like in my book, I spoke to Dave Graeber, who talks about how to organize communities democratically. I spoke to David DeGraw from the Occupy movement, who talked about a thing called liquid democracy. Well, yeah, there is a degree of representative. People aren't going to want to vote on whether or not to get a new sewage system down their street. There can be a degree of administration and bureaucracy, but there needs to be a fundamental shift. People that are in these positions of power have got to recognise that they are servants, not leaders. There needs to be an ideological shift. They'll never make that shift as long as they're operating at the behest of huge corporations. We know that. The infrastructure exists. The idea exists. Democracy exists, the infrastructure exists, but not the will. People don't have the will to act on behalf of the people because they're not incentivized to, because we've not told them what we need. We've not told them that we're tired of this now. We've not come together with a coherent solution. And in my book, mate, I've spoken to, you know, like a dozen people that, you know, from Thomas Piketty through Naomi Klein, who provide the alternatives. The information is there. Now we have to show them that we're not prepared to live with anything less than the best we can do.
Isabella, you're terrific. Thanks for calling. Russell, what exactly does that mean? Next steps, right in front of you, right in front of those you're appealing to right now. What does that mean, the revolution you're calling for? Next step.
The next step is, if you, anything that you're unhappy with in your own life, see if that concern is shared by other people. For example, I take huge inspiration for the fast food workers of America who are unionising and coming together to demand a fair wage. In my country, all over the city of London, where people, which is being socially cleansed so it can become a playground for the uber rich, people are coming together on their housing estates and their projects to say, we want to live here. We want controlled rents like we were promised. We don't want the great cities of the world to become these exclusive Disney World for billionaires and oligarchs. So if you find that, if you notice that down your street houses are being foreclosed, if you notice that in your block people are being moved on, talk to one another. We're being robbed of our most basic rights, our right to commune, to collectivise, to act in unity. This will be a very localised process. We will have a global ideology of conservation, preservation and respect for the planet, of implementing systems that are beneficial to us as individuals and communities, not that are beneficial to elite organisations. It's just rational decisions, and engagement is going to be an easy process, and it will be joyful.
Russell, can you go down this road and go back to fun? Can we have your comedy again?
Yeah, of course we can. I'm a bit tired. I've been on Howard Stern this morning. I've been fending off all sorts of madness all morning.
Russell Brand, his new book is Revolution. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Russell, good luck. Thanks for being with us today.
Good luck you, Tom. We're all in it together.
All right. Off you go. Thank you, Russell. Russell Brand, thanks very much. Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Be first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit the like button there. You'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your news feed. Thanks for all your calls and comments today. Thank you, Russell Brand. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.